Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Wine, the 11th commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard about autism spectrum disorder? Autism spectrum disorder. Well, I haven't heard about spectrum disorder, but I have heard about autism. I'm sure all of you have too. Would you like to learn more about dealing with autism? Have you ever wanted to know what therapies are the most effective for treating autism? Can you imagine growing out of autism? Wouldn't that be wonderful? Tell me, do you know what it's like to go from crazy to sane? I do that on most days, really. Have you ever heard about a book called The Wingmaker, or a woman called The Brain Broad? Yeah, you heard me, The Brain Broad, not the broad brain, but the brain broad. Or better yet now, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for today? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and to learn more about autism? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place, and I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest. She is a success coach extraordinaire. She will provide us with wonderful, informative lessons and some really, really great advice. I'm pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk for Media and syndicated at iHeartRadio Talk with over 50 million listeners. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure. Also, LinkedIn has announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed last year. Now, let me tell you about our guest today. Our guest is known as the Brain Broad. She is a doubly board-certified international neurofeedback play therapist working hands-on in the field of brain health and healing. She is studying for a PhD in psychology with a specialty in psychosociology. Now, that's a word I'll have trouble with. She is a seasoned speaker and performer. She travels globally, both with her one-woman show, Crazy to Sane, and also working hands-on with a variety of brain disorders. You can see her clinical work chronicled in Fix It in 5 with The Brain Broad, a reality series on the Autism Channel, or listen to her podcast, A New Spin on Autism Answers. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show today, Lynette Louise. Hi, Lynette. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I am thrilled to be on a show talking about autism during Autism Awareness Month, where there's a no-wine zone. I'm so excited about that. I can't tell you. I was going to come on and start whining just for a joke, but I was just too happy about it to whine. It's just, I have no gene right now, no wine gene.
Yeah, you can't even fake it. Let's back up, because I stumbled over a word in the introduction, psychosociology. How do you pronounce
it? Would you like some help with that?
Yes, I would.
psychophysiology. It's a really exciting field. For me, I'm thrilled because I'm part of a brand new doctorate in a fully accredited university. And so it's pretty exciting to find that program you've always looked for that takes psychology and physiology, puts them together, because that's what I do. So
that's
exciting.
Fantastic. Very, very exciting, especially now that I can pronounce it. Before we begin our interview, could you share with my listeners how your success story began, where you were born, and what schools you went to, and who your early mentors were?
Well, unlike my grandchildren, I was born in a hospital. Okay, so I was born in Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Oh, okay.
And I, began up there in the north and spent most of my childhood in Manitoba, where they really close to Winnipeg, so it was freezing a lot of the time.
Uh-huh.
And I had this theory when I was a child and as an early parent that if you moved south, you'd be a much kinder, more loving parent because you wouldn't be spending so much time going, what do you mean your snowsuit has to come off? It's because you have to go pee again.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, this was very difficult because I adopted a bunch of kids, so that's kind of where a lot of people begin my story, but I actually think my story began in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I was somewhat challenged, and I could never tell whether my problems mm-hmm. were because of my mother being extremely physical with us and quite mm-hmm. angry, easily to explode was she.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you kind of put it to that, but later, much later, as more information came to light and I became much more aware of what belongs in what basket, it became really obvious that the challenge for my mother might have been that I was so different. And
uh-huh.
so, you know, the question was she like she was because I was like I was, or was I like I was because she was like she was? And I was kind of in that place of confusion and difficulty, and I thought I'd solve the problem by adopting special needs children, literally. So so maybe my thinking cap was a little askew, but it actually worked.
It actually
worked remarkably so. I adopted 4 kids on the spectrum of autism. They were multiply diagnosed, and I got a couple of runaway kids that I ended up taking custody of. And so I raised 8, and we were a real mixed bag of tricks, and almost everybody got better, except for one who's still struggling. There you go.
Well, that's amazing. Were you, let me ask you, Lynette, were you an only child?
Oh, gosh, no, there were 3 of us primarily, and then my parents adopted. So adoption was natural. My dad was adopted, and my brother was adopted when he was 7, and I was 12. And then we had a surprise baby when I was 15. My mom had a baby, and I remember going, ew, you know what that means? We were all in that little camper together. Ew!
Now, while you were growing up and you had issues, as you said, challenges, did you have anyone who mentored you or that you admired or inspired you at that time?
Gosh, did I? No. But what I did have was media. I had television. I had movies. I had inspiration come my way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was someone who watched Mary Poppins and thought, ooh, I want to be her, or For Whom the Bell Tolls was a big one for me. And in every case, my mentors, my heroes, the people that I wanted to be like were people that reached beyond impossible to save children. So this was sort of a theme of my life, always and forever has been a theme of my life. And I would call those kinds of things more my sort of the light off in the distance that I traveled
mm-hmm.
after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was your inspiration. Well, you know, I can share that too, because I know growing up, I kind of had a strange childhood, and I did take comfort and solace from some of the television shows and radio shows that we listened to. Now, let's jump to what is autism spectrum disorder?
I think this is hilarious, actually, because I, you know, adopted children, and back then they said, well, he's kind of autistic, or he's mm-hmm. really autistic, and that's mm-hmm. a spectrum. But
okay.
now...
Okay.
You know, now it's more official, and they have like a questionnaire, and they go, okay, you belong here, and, you know, instead of kind of and sort of and really, you're lightly brushed with autism, or you have low functioning or high functioning, but it's really no different than a cold. Some people get a light cold. I know, it sounds hilarious, but it's true. Everything's a spectrum. What isn't? What do you all, except maybe a broken leg, but even then, one person would have a broken leg and it heals fast, another person it would heal slow for all these other physiological reasons. So autism spectrum disorder is autism, and it's various presentations of extremeness. And it's difficult because people, you know, they put it in this one basket, and then they hear a story of a child getting better and coming off the spectrum, and then they compare it to somebody who is very low on the spectrum and very challenged, and they feel like bad parents or bad professionals. Now, and it's different.
Share with us some of the more ridiculous assumptions out there about autism, some of the things that people who don't know the truth about it tend to believe.
Oh, the one of the most ridiculous is that they don't like to be touched.
Oh,
It's so everybody knows, oh, autistic people, they don't like to be touched. I never met an autistic person that didn't want me to touch them and hug them and snuggle with them and, like, rub their head. But you have to know that they have these unusual sensory systems. So at certain times or in certain parts of their body, they don't like to be touched. And they're usually different parts than us. So an example of that would be a really common area of sensitivity is the chest. And we normally, you know, when we want to embrace someone, we put our arms around them and we kind of go chest to chest.
Right.
And so this would be uncomfortable for somebody who has that sensitivity. And then everyone will go, oh, he doesn't like to be touched or she doesn't like to be touched. And so then that person learns, oh, I guess I don't like to be touched because whenever you hug me, that's uncomfortable. But along comes Lynette, da-da, and I go, well, here, let me scrub your head or squeeze your feet. And they're like, oh, yes, do more of that.
They love it, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that is an assumption that I've heard, and I think most of my listeners will relate to exactly what you're telling them. So this is very interesting. Are there any other assumptions that are ridiculous?
Sure, hours worth, but you just stop me when I've told you too much.
Well, I'll give you 2 minutes.
Okay, so let's do another one. One of them is that, you know, they don't have empathy or they don't bond. They kind of put those in the same basket often, and that's also ridiculous. I find that everybody that I've ever met, I go into homes and I sometimes meet a child for only 3 days and then I go and do my own thing for years and then I see them again. They always remember me. They've always looked forward to seeing me again.
Right.
It's just not true that they don't bond and they don't connect and they don't have empathy. It's silly. But I see why it's thought, because they don't present their information the way we do. So they don't go, oh, Lynette, it's so nice to meet you. I was thinking about you all year. You know, they go, oh, it's Lynette, and they walk away because they have to go gather themselves for a second. Or maybe, hi, nice to see you, eyes down. So what we're talking about is a confusion of presentation as opposed to emotion, and it makes for some real problems in the way that people set up their therapies.
And you know, so many times you hear about autism and you'll hear that the child won't look at people and that would be one of the signs. However, I guess they have to do it on their own terms, don't they?
Well, you know, it's actually a sensory issue. Sometimes there's sensory confusion or overwhelm in the pathways. And so you might have a child who can extend you his ear or extend you his eyes, but both at the same time is really challenging.
Okay, gotcha.
Or, you know, so it might be, I can look at you or I can listen to you or I can shake your hand. Which one of these do you want?
Which door do you choose? You know, we're going to take a break now and hear from our sponsors, and we're going to come back with Lynette Louise, the Brain Broad. We'll be right back.
Do you want to learn how to live into your dreams? One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams. The new book by Tom Ingracia and Jared Kredemski captures the thought-provoking stories of 16 people from all walks of life who have triumphed over adversity to achieve their goals. Plus, you'll get 10 self-assessment tools to design your own blueprint for success. Unlock your true potential. Fulfill your dreams. Be inspired. One Door Closes is available from Amazon.com. Everyone deserves a happy life. Life is supposed to be fun. Your life is supposed to feel good, and you're meant to feel happiness in your life and to satisfy your dreams. And you can. Because the only reason anyone wants anything or does anything is that they think they will feel better in the having of it or the doing of it. They think they will feel better in the experiencing of it. Coming soon, a website where you can learn more on how you can have the life you deserve at afeelgoodworld.com.
I want to share with our listeners that Tom and Jared were on the show last night, and they shared with us their experience with Boston Strong. They completed the marathon, and they shared their fantastic story. And it, just like Dale Bruner, it really made us all feel very good and very, very proud of them. I'm back with my guest, Lynette Louise, the Brain Broad. Now, Lynette, you're an international expert, and you've seen all kinds of therapies and attitudes. Of all of the ones that are available, tell us which one you think is the most effective.
Well, it's the one that I use. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing that one. So neurofeedback is what I see as the most effective. What's beautiful about neurofeedback, which is biofeedback for the brain, is that there's not an endpoint to it. So you can use neurofeedback to help somebody that's doing peak performance training. And, in fact, a lot of very famous performers and athletes use it. Mm-hmm. Or you can walk it all the way back to somebody who has like a severe anxiety disorder, or I use it with autism, Parkinson's, strokes. So it doesn't really have a point where you go, oh, well, that it won't fit that population anymore. So it's very flexible because it's a way of teaching the brain to help itself and to change itself.
Now, so, how do you go about doing neurofeedback? How do you apply it?
Well, you would have to get somebody like myself or go to a clinic to do it and then teach you how. I do home training. So I would go into a home and I would teach the family how to change everything, how to do some neurofeedback. They would buy their own software, and then I would guide them over the miles, sometimes many miles, via internet. And it's a simple process and a complex process. So that's the beauty of it. I can give it to someone and say, here, this is where you put the sensor. So they put a sensor on the head, and the child's brain waves are being piped into the computer, or the adults, whoever. I treat the whole family because who couldn't use a little stress reduction?
Right.
And then, So you're looking at a monitor if you're the person who's got this sensor on the head. Let's just talk about one sensor. And the monitor you're looking at will have a game on it, a really simple game. And you run the game with your brain waves. You don't need to know how. You just go ahead and watch the game, and the information of how the game works comes back to your brain, and your brain learns, and then you decide you want to catch the diamond or whatever, and you learn how to focus and refocus and make change. And so it's in the sense of just stick it on the head, push the right buttons, do what I tell you. It's simple. In the sense of its ability to address so many different things, it's extremely complex. So it's beautiful therapy. And it really depends on whose hands it's in.
Yes, yes. This is fascinating. You know, my family, my daughters have just gotten me addicted to Candy Crush. And we're talking about relieving stress. And Candy Crush doesn't do that. I started calling it Crack Crush because it's as addictive as cocaine or crack. Now, okay, so now you're doing it with a monitor on the internet, in the home. You treat the entire family or whoever is stressed out, and as you said, I'm sure everyone is. What are your thoughts about people outgrowing autism? And do you think it's rising as fast as they're claiming?
Okay, on the outgrowing, my thoughts are it depends on where you are on the spectrum and what your environment is encouraging you to do. I mean, the truth is that we train and teach and develop our children. We do that whether they got a label or not. And you know, I'm going to try and simplify this, but let's say you have someone who is, you know, fairly high on the spectrum, and it wouldn't take extreme amount of intervention to really help them, and they're born uh-huh. into a family that has a lot of very precise and clear rules and is very loving and gets the child working. Maybe they're on a farm and they're doing chores, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of following the child's interests and building a life around what the child likes, and that's just naturally how that family works. Uh-huh. Someone might end up saying they grew out of autism.
Uh-huh.
Right? So can you grow out of autism? Well, there is this point. There's a couple of points in the trajectory of the brain development where you're going to go one way or another. And with the right environmental influences, you'll mm-hmm. improve along the right trajectory. Now, that's not unusual to say because that's why therapies work. Uh-huh. The reason the therapies that come into your home and teach your child behaviorally do the work that they do is because your brain can change. So mm-hmm. if you're in a family that encourages the right kind of change, then you're going to grow out of autism.
Yeah.
If you're high on the spectrum.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now tell us, what is DSMB and what did this do to change the way autism is diagnosed?
Well, that's the DSM-5.
Uh-huh.
And that's the diagnostic manual, right?
Okay.
So there's a bunch of eggheads get together periodically and say, let's change the rules according to what we see happening out in the world and the new knowledge we have and the science that's showed up. And it started out, the first manual was quite small, and it's just grown and grown and grown. You know, we don't throw mm-hmm. much out. We just keep adding to it. So it's a pretty big book now, and it's changed its criteria for autism. And one of the examples is that Asperger's, which was considered a type of autism but sort of its own little category,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't exist anymore, and it's now inside the spectrum. So they kind of took what was being shown about the disorders that were very similar and realized that they all sort of belonged in this, or I mean, this is a very political and arguable statement, but realized that they belonged in all the same diagnosis and just put them in different places on the spectrum. And then they also included sensory integration issues, which they hadn't had in there before.
Okay. Okay, now you're a single mom of 8 children, with 4 being on the autism spectrum. Tell us about that, and how do you raise 8 kids and then manage running a business?
Okay, first we didn't answer one of the questions that's kind of a big one, so I'm just going to say that, yes, I do believe that the spectrum is growing at an epidemic rate. It's, you know, we could get into it deeply, how much of it's misdiagnosis or mm-hmm. adult, you know, diagnosis that wouldn't have happened before, but really it is growing. So we'll just put that there.
Okay,
and
thank
then
you.
Thank
you. Okay.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And then my story. Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't know. I think you just do it because you said you would. and you get up in the morning, you go, okay, what am I doing today? No, it wasn't easy. It was really, really tough. But it wasn't tough because of my children so much, or even my own issues. I had lots of issues.
What is the age span for 8 children? From what age to what age are they?
Well, as of the 27th of April, they are 29 to 39.
Okay. Okay. So,
a 10-year span of 8 children.
Oh, wow. And adopted 4 of them. So you've been a busy lady.
Technically I adopted 4 and took custody of 2. So 2 were biological, 2 I got custody of, and 4 were legal adoptions. And that was all just because of the parameters of how it came around and their ages and things.
Okay.
So I raised 8 kids, I was very busy.
You certainly were, young lady. You certainly were a busy, busy mom, and in your spare time, you became quite a successful entrepreneur. And after our break, we're going to talk about the entrepreneur skills of Lynette Louise and what happens when she took her kids out of school. We'll be right back.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories their struggles, and their successes. People who have priceless personalities. In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Are you a fitness professional, a trainer, or a coach? Would you like consistent and timely updates on your team's performance? We have a completely customizable app that can give you real-time information via the internet or your handheld phone. Track the performance of your client's progress with their physical fitness regimen. Track team members' performance or schedule a workout session. Meet up at the gym, on the bike trail, or wherever your physical activities take you. The app is called Socially Fit, or SoFit, and can be found on the iTunes Store. Look for the blue Socially Fit icon. When combined with data analysis capabilities, you not only feel the effects of your fitness routine, you also see the graphical progress of your results. The app makes the complex simple, so that more of your time is spent sculpting your physique, with less time tracking your results with old-fashioned pen and paper. Download it today to begin a new year with data to show your progress in meeting your goals. Are you socially fit?
I hope all of you will become socially fit with me this year. We're back with Lynette Louise, and she's a fantastic, she's called, known as the Brain Broad. Now, Lynette, have you always been an entrepreneur? When did this begin for you?
Well, there wasn't really a choice because I was raising all these kids, and they were all so challenged and different, and I was constantly getting phone calls from the school. So I did try a normal job. I was a letter carrier. I think that lasted 5 months. But you're always having to respond to emergencies and stuff with your kids, and you know, there's too many of them. And when the chicken pox came through back then, it was like, you know,
oh, yeah,
a year. So,
yeah.
So it required learning how to and I tried getting married to solve that problem to see if I could get an income stream, but that didn't work out so good either. They kind of counted heads and said, I changed my mind. So, you know, I ended up going, well, I have to do this myself and finding ways. And I tried, you know, the typical things like multi-level marketing things and whatnot at first.
Sure.
But I ended up doing stand-up comedy initially, and that was my first successful career as a stand-up comedian running rooms, so in different bars and things, hiring other comedians in and doing like a comedy karaoke kind of invention that is common now but was never done then.
Oh,
and
fun.
It was very fun, and I learned to, you know, fit my career into my family.
Okay.
And fit my family into my career. I've thrown them on stage. I've taken them on prison tours. I've,
Well,
I dressed them up as clowns.
You took them on the North American comedy show prison tour, and you took them out of school. Now, there's pros and cons to taking kids out of school. Share those with us.
Well, when I took them on the prison tour, that was sort of like when anybody plans a trip and you just exit school for a little while, write some essays on it, and go back. Of course, if you can't read and write and talk, it's hard to write an essay, but you get the idea.
Sure.
So that was just an experiential thing, and it was really good for the kids in many ways, especially the teenagers. At that time, they were starting to romanticize in the media the idea of being in jail, and there was some TV series and things, and I could see my teenagers kind of thinking, ooh, I could get arrested. That'd be tough. I'll end up writing a book while I'm in there and be famous. And I'm like, okay, so let's have a look at what this is really like. And they didn't feel that way afterwards. They were quite cured. So it was good for that. The taking the kids out of school was the solution in my children's lives. So maybe I got a taste of it then. But I just kept struggling with school system, and I just kept trying to help them. And every summer, especially my nonverbal son would start to talk, and then he would always stop when he went to school. And
they would regress.
Yeah, we're not talking about little changes here. We're talking about major challenges caused by, you know, the difference between whether you're going to survive in life or not and be independent. So I fought it and fought it and fought it, and all kinds of things happened. And finally I just said, you know what, I'm just going to do this myself. And I'll just take them out of school and homeschool. And it was actually part of why I came to America, was to have the kind of freedom that was that I was enabled to have here. Because in Canada, it was really not encouraged at that time. In fact, that would have caused a lot of negative attention.
So you took them on the prison tour, but then did you take them completely out of the school system and then completely homeschool them? Or was it half and half?
Yeah.
How did that work?
Well, the prison tour, I was living in Canada. When we did the prison tour, we did all of North America. And then I came back and I got my own TV series for a little while. And we just sort of hit this place where I knew if I didn't leave Canada, I'd never homeschool. And it just wasn't working. I let go of everything and came here. And we started again. And I ended up homeschooling. I tried the school system here thinking maybe it would be more workable, but it wasn't. And so then I just was at an IEP, and I said to them, do you even like my son? I'm serious. We were talking about my one son who was starting to really get in trouble, and he was the highest functioning one. And when I said that, they all averted their eyes.
Oh, not good. Not good.
And so I said, yeah, we're done. And then I had to figure out a way to do that many kids and homeschool them as the sole teacher. So that's where the IV or the RV idea came.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's, I can see why. When they can't look you in the eye, something is wrong. Now, what are some tips that you can give and tricks for families with or without an autistic child in their lives? Share some of your wisdom.
Well, I think it always starts with what's your goal. Too often we get dragged along by the world's ideas of what should happen for us, and we start buying the junk that is thrown at us. And I'll give you a good example. I never finished high school, you know, and I don't regret that. You know, I couldn't do high school, but I've done college. I think it's really important as a parent, as a mentor, as a best friend, as for yourself. You always say, just a minute, what am I trying to make happen here? What's my goal? And it's a great entrepreneurial skill as well. If you don't say, what am I trying to have at the end of the day, you just make a big mess. And everyone's going to have their own ideas of what you want. Somebody who thinks that money is the important thing is going to be saying, well, that's not lucrative done that way. If money isn't your thing, then deciding based on how lucrative it is wrong. And so that's true of your children. It's true of all of it. So my advice is always get your goal first and know that your goal can change. You don't have to get all, you know, bent out of shape about, what if I pick the wrong one? Well, pick another one another day. But pick a goal so that you can say, am I getting there? So I say, well, what's your goal for your child?
Sure, you know? Right. Now, how many of your children live at home with you now?
One.
Just one. Okay. And the others
one.
Are...
The others are all independent and off the spectrum, although, you know, occasionally they're traveling around in the weird zone, but...
everyone's kids are there.
Yeah, and they're very accomplished. My one son is a helicopter mechanic. He's been to Iraq. He's been to Kuwait. He serves for the National Guard. He's got, you know, he got PTSD twice, which I had to fix. He's, so he's living a real man's life, and there's some challenges in it like there is for anybody else, and he's handsome, and the women love him, so he's doing fine. Another son has been working the pipelines forever, owns a house and a couple of trucks, and somebody better grab him up soon because he's great.
Good. That's great.
And then I got my guy who can't really he can't really hold down a job, so he mows lawns and works at the barbershop and does odd jobs.
Okay, yeah. And everyone seems to fit in. Now, you've had so much success, but now you're going on for a doctorate degree. Why do you feel that that's important for you to do?
Well, there's a couple of reasons, but ironically, the real reason is because one of my daughters was having a problem, and I tried to step in and be listened to in the school system when assisting her, and they just sort of rolled their eyes like, who are you? You're some alternative medicine person that knows nothing, and I went, I'll get a PhD. That'll teach you.
Gotcha.
So that started it, but really it's for that reason, because I speak a lot and I write books, and it's really important that what I've managed to discover is listened to. I think it's special. I think it's important. And there are a whole lot of people that won't listen if you don't have traditional letters after your name.
That is so, so true. Unfortunately, sad but true. We're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. When we come back, Lynette's going to share her website information, tell you how to get her books. And I want her to share, when she comes back, how she picked the brand The Brain Broad. I would like to hear how that came about. We'll be right back with Lynette Louise.
Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shall Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor, with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shall Not Whine at Amazon.com. What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, laughter play in well-being, provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
Welcome back with my guest, Lynette Louise. Lynette, could you share your website information and share with my listeners where they can get your books?
Sure. For speaking and performing and that sort of information, go to LynetteLouise.com. For autism-related or brain-related information, go to brainbody.net. If you forget either of those, you go ahead and Google The Brain Broad. I'm the only one you'll find me. And then you just go follow the links and the click, click, clicks, and you end up at one of those websites. And my books are on Amazon. You can go to Amazon and find them, but you can also go over to my website and go on the book page, and there they are. So it's pretty accessible and easy to find.
Now, how did you choose the brand, The Brain Broad? I love it. And you're right. It's the only one out there.
Right. Well, you know, what's really interesting is that people were calling me the Brain Lady, and that was taken.
Really? Okay. So there you
and,
go.
Right. And then also I wanted a play on words, so I have you know, the brain brought us the Google gods. How do you fix that? I had this little ditty in my show, and we, you know, and I was trying to look for stuff that rhymed. And I was also trying to do a play on words for going abroad because the show's international and I'm international. So broad just fit. And let's be honest, it's really catchy.
Yes, it's very catchy, very catchy. It's a keeper. What is Fix It in 5 with the brain broad? Tell us about that.
So Fix It in 5, yeah, that's the web series where I'm choosing 5 families. I've already shot 2 and edited 4 episodes are up on the Autism Channel. And I just was seeing so much benefit in my approach of play and joyous inviting to change and then using neural feedback, and I just wanted to be able to prove it. And a study doesn't prove it. You know, everybody then argues about the study. I wanted you to see it. So I take cameras with me. I've picked 5 families, so it's all different cultures, all different places in the world. And I take cameras with me, and in 5 days we have to fix stuff. So,
okay.
I got 5 days to make a difference, and so far so good. We're making a difference.
This is kind of like the guy that goes in and remodels the house.
Exactly, only we're working with people.
Oh, I think it's much more challenging. And now you took this program to Uganda?
Yeah, the first family that we're airing is the Uganda family. And then the next one is the San Francisco family. That's coming up soon. And then I think I'm on my way to Israel. So we'll see.
Wow. How exciting. Now, when can we look for the Uganda family? What date?
It's a web series and it's streaming, so you can watch the first 4 episodes anytime you like if you have a Roku box or if you have, they've got the Panasonic TVs, smart TVs working it as well, but they're rolling that out country to country, so I'm not really sure if it's working here yet or not,
how
but
exciting.
Roku for sure.
Very exciting. Now, what, in your opinion, what's the difference when someone says your child is...